Maui News via a remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. The overreaching theme emerging from China's ongoing Communist Party Congress is one of continuity, not change. The week-long meeting is expected to reappoint the President Xi Jinping as leader, reaffirm a commitment to his policies for the next 5 years, and possibly elevate his status even further as one of the most powerful leaders in China's modern history. For many Chinese wary of pandemic restrictions, the more immediate question is whether there will be any easing of zero COVID after the party Congress. The answer is probably not immediately, and changes when they do come will most likely be gradual. Pro-Kremlin officials are blaming Ukraine for a rocket attack that struck the mayor's office in a key Ukrainian city controlled by the separatists. The municipal building in Donetsk was seriously damaged by the rocket attack. Separately, Ukrainian officials said Russian rockets struck a city across from the Zaporizhia nuclear plant. Kyiv also reported holding the line in fierce fighting around the town of Bakhmut. The fighting comes 7 weeks into a Ukrainian counteroffensive in the south and in the east. Late Saturday, a Washington-based think tank accused Moscow of forcibly deporting Ukrainians to Russia and said it likely amounted to ethnic cleansing. A Salvadorian judge has ordered the provisional arrest of several retired high-ranking members of the armed forces accused of having participated in the killings of four Dutch journalists in 1982 while they were covering the Central American nation's civil war. Among those facing arrest orders are a former defense minister, General Jose Guillermo Garcia, and Colonel Francisco Antonio Moran, a former director of the now-defunct Treasury Police. This is VOA News. British Prime Minister Liz Truss has seen a turbulent start to her premiership, with many saying her leadership is now hanging by a thread. AP correspondent Karen Shamus reports.
In just 6 weeks in power, Truss's time at the top has been bumpy, to say the least. Her policies have triggered emergency central bank intervention.
Treasury Chief, Conservative Member of Parliament Robert Halfen, described the last few weeks as a series of horror stories.
The government has looked like libertarian jihadists and treated the whole country as kind of laboratory mice in which to carry out kind of ultra free market experiments.
The Financial Secretary to the Treasury, Andrew Griffith, defended the Prime Minister.
This is a time when we need stability.
Nevertheless, with new Chancellor Jeremy Hunt in power, many say Truss is still Prime Minister in name, but power in government has shifted to Hunt. Hunt has signalled he plans to rip up much of her remaining economic plan when he makes a medium-term budget statement at the end of October. Karen Chavez, London.
Brazil's former president, Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, and incumbent Jair Bolsonaro have clashed on their first one-to-one debate 2 weeks before the presidential election's runoff. The debates in the election's first runoff round featured several other candidates, none of whom garnered more than 5% of the October 2nd vote. They were largely distractions from the two obvious frontrunners in previous debates. Earlier this month, Da Silva, who is universally known as Lula, won the election's first round with 48% of the vote compared to Bolsonaro's 43%. Polls do indicate that the leftist former president, who governed between the years 2003 and 2010, remains the frontrunner, though his lead has shrunk. Recapping our top story, overreaching theme emerging from China's ongoing Communist Party as it continues into Congress is one of continuity, not change. It's going to be a week-long meeting, and it's expected to reappoint the current president, Xi Jinping, as leader and reaffirm a commitment to his policies for the next 5 years and possibly elevate his status even further as one of the most powerful leaders in China's modern history. There is more at voanews.com. Again, voanews.com. Via remotes, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Today is Monday, October 17th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinua Duofo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, Chinese leader calls for faster military deployment, but no changes in strained relations with Washington.
Delegates are expected to approve Xi Jinping to an unprecedented third term, leading the second largest economy in the world and one of the biggest military forces.
Protests continue to rage in Iran despite harsh crackdown by security forces.
Flames and smoke rise from a Evin prison in Tehran. Details remain unclear as to how the notorious facility known for housing political prisoners in Iran caught fire.
An unidentified gunman killed 11 people in central Mexican city Bar. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. Chinese leader Xi Jinping has called for faster military development and announced no change in policies that have strained relations with Washington and tightened the ruling Communist Party's control over society and economy. This as the ongoing Communist Party Congress is expected to hand a third five-year term to CCP's General Secretary Xi. As State Department Bureau Chief Nikki Cheng reports, some experts say Xi is expected to lift China towards an even more authoritarian government, while others predict competition between the U.S. and China will accelerate.
Delegates are expected to approve Xi Jinping to an unprecedented third term, leading the second largest economy in the world and one of the biggest military forces. Robert Daly is director of the Wilson Center's Kissinger Institute on China and the United States.
The overall purpose of these congresses is to set the tone, the policy direction for the coming 5 years. This is a special year because the focus is going to be on one man, Xi Jinping, who has already been the general secretary of the Chinese Communist Party for 10 years, and he is going to be anointed for a third five-year term in what essentially could make him China's leader for life.
China's 20th Party Congress comes days after the White House released its national security strategy that identifies China as a fierce competitor to the United States. Jack Sullivan is White House National Security Advisor.
The PRC represents America's most consequential geopolitical challenge. Competition with the PRC is most pronounced in the Indo-Pacific, but it is also increasingly global.
But the White House says Washington is not looking for a conflict. Former State Department officials predict a more authoritarian Chinese government. Miles Yu is a former State Department advisor on China policy, now with the Hudson Institute.
Xi Jinping does get his will and he continues to rule China as a supreme dictator, which is very likely because in that kind of system, there is no tangible dissent powerful enough to change the final outcome.
In China, rare protests against government policies broke out ahead of the party congress. Banners strung from an overpass were quickly removed in Beijing. According to analysts, it is a sign that more Chinese people have grown wary of the strict zero COVID policy. John Kirby is White House National Security Council Coordinator for Strategic Communications.
We continue, as we have all around the world, to make clear that we believe in the basic right of peaceful protest and that people around the world, no matter where they live, no matter under what government they subsist, should have the right to peacefully protest and to make their voices heard without fear of retribution or violence in return.
Kirby tells VOA the Biden administration will stay laser-focused on the challenges that Beijing presents to the rest of the world. Nike Ching, VOA News.
France is pledging air defense missiles to protect Ukrainian cities against drone strikes and an expanded training program for Ukrainian soldiers. This as Russia continues to attack civilian targets in Ukraine, at times using Iranian-made drones. Experts tell VOA that Russia may be turning to Iran and North Korea for military supplies because it is running out of its own. VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain looks at how military cooperation between Tehran and Moscow might impact the Biden administration's efforts to revive the Iran nuclear deal.
The United Kingdom's defense ministry has confirmed that Russian forces have been using Iranian-made Shahed-136 drones since at least August, and that they were used in the brutal attacks this week. John Kirby, spokesperson for the National Security Council, spoke to VOA about the Iranian drones.
We knew that these drones were going to be introduced onto the battlefield when we said publicly that the Russians were going to Tehran to buy them. It remains to be seen how much of a factor they are, but clearly they have lethal capabilities.
Kirby said the U.S. and its NATO allies are providing Ukraine with the air defense systems they need to respond to Russia's attacks. One expert told VOA there is likely a practical reason Moscow turned to Tehran for drones. Another expert told VOA it is noteworthy that Iran is getting involved in Russia's war against Ukraine. Fatanka told VOA he does not believe Iran providing drones to Russia will have a strong impact on the already stalled U.S. attempts to revive the Iran nuclear deal. And he said Tehran is trying to play down its cooperation with Moscow.
They don't want to be seen to be taking part in this conflict because they're worried about A, public opinion in Iran, which is very much against the Russian invasion of Ukraine.
Late last month, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky condemned the use of Iranian drones to attack his country and reduced the number of diplomatic personnel at the Iranian embassy in Kyiv. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
Thank you, Cindy. Protests in Iran raged in the second month after a woman there died in police custody. Mahsa Amini has become the face of human rights movement focused on ridding the country of the Islamic Republic. Meanwhile, images surfaced over the weekend of an infamous prison in Iran known for housing political prisoners engulfed in flames. The White House continues pledging support for demonstrators. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has more.
Flames and smoke rise from Evin prison in Tehran. Details remain unclear as to how the notorious facility known for housing political prisoners in Iran caught fire. The prison blaze raged against the backdrop of what is now the second month of sometimes violent street demonstrations in the Islamic Republic. It all started when 22-year-old Mahsa Amini died in the custody of Iran's morality police. The Islamic Republic released a video claiming to show Amini collapsing in a police station. Iran says the fall triggered a fatal heart attack, but her family disputes that account, telling VOA Persian Amini had no known heart troubles prior to her arrest. News of Amini's death sparked global outrage and demonstrations, with some Iranians burning their passports outside the Iranian embassy in Chile. The outrage continues to spark a worldwide movement opposed to Iran's theocratic government.
Iran has to end the violence against its own citizens, simply exercising their fundamental rights. And, Mahsa Amini's death was... I've been doing foreign policy a long, long time. It stunned me what it awakened in Iran. It's awakened something that I don't think will be quieted in a long, long time.
Meanwhile, Iran's supreme leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, who at first said he was heartbroken by Amini's death, has since turned to blaming the United States and Israel for sowing dissent in the Islamic Republic. He says protests won't destroy the country's foundations. But Iranians keep sending videos to VOA showing widespread demonstrations, with some burning banners of Iranian officials. One recent video captures voices chanting from the rooftops in Tehran, "Death to the dictator," a popular call against the supreme leader. Some jailed at the smoldering Evin prison are known to be dual nationals of Western affiliation. The State Department says it's working with Swiss partners to secure their release. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
At least 18 migrants died last week in a sea crossing from Turkey to Greece. It was one of the deadliest in recent years, and experts fear more may follow as tensions between Greece and Turkey soar in the Aegean Sea that divides them. Anthi Karasava traveled to the island of Lesbos and tracked some of the Somali women who survived the shipwreck.
When monster waves flip the boat over, thrusting it onto the rocky shores of this craggy island, Ismahan, like scores of other Somali women crammed in the rubber dinghy, struggled to stay alive. I was tossed in the sea, she tells me, with the help of a translator. But within seconds, she says, people around me were dead and drowning. I reached for a rubber tire that was keeping one of the dead women afloat and clasped onto it, remaining in the rough sea for about an hour until Greek police and authorities came to pull us out. I never thought I would make it, she says. These visions now haunt my head, dead bodies scattered in the sea. I close my eyes, but I can no longer sleep. She peels off her long purple scarf and reveals bumps and bruises on her head, scars left behind from her traumatic sea crossing from Turkey. The journey was the final leg of an escape, as she calls it, from Somalia, that began in early August, a risky odyssey for which she paid $900, fleeing the country's drought and humanitarian crisis, but also the abuse, she confesses, of her husband and his family. Now, though, a week after the near-death crossing, Ismahan says she would do it again. I was left with no other option. I want to get asylum here and bring over my 8 children, 2 boys and 6 girls. Scrunched now in an isobox hut in a refugee camp on Lesbos, Ismahan and 5 other Somali women who survived the sinking will put in their request to local authorities on Monday. And while it is unlikely that strict migration rules here will grant them asylum status, experts here are bracing for more migrant crossings. Already this year, Greece has seen more than 150% increase in migrant sea crossings from Turkey compared to 2021. Much of this has been linked to the Taliban takeover in Afghanistan, the political crisis in Somalia, and renewed unrest in Lebanon and other pockets of the Middle East. Antika Rasava, VOA, Lesbos.
Unidentified gunmen opened fire in a bar in the central Mexican town of Irapuato on Saturday evening, shooting dead 6 women and 6 men, local authorities said, the second mass shooting in the state of Guanajuato in less than a month. The city government said 3 people were injured in the attack in the south of Irapuato, adding that security forces were trying to track down the assailants. The motive behind the shooting was not immediately clear. An initial statement by the city had put the death toll at 11. Guanajuato is a major manufacturing hub and production site for many of the world's top car makers. It has been convulsed in recent years by brutal turf wars between rival drug gangs. On September 21st, gunmen shot dead 10 people in an attack at the bar in the Guanajuato town of Tanimoro, about 60 miles southwest of Irapuato. You are listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedwafo in Washington. Rescue workers in Turkey are continuing a desperate effort in a race against time following the death of at least 41 miners in an accident in the northern Batin province. Many miners are believed to be still trapped. Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
Rescue workers arriving back on the surface after spending hours in one of Turkey's deepest coal mines searching for dozens of missing miners. Rescue workers spoke of terrible conditions, with the air thick with dust. On Friday evening, a blast ripped through the mine, while over 100 miners were working, almost half of them over 300 metres deep. Many of the miners had been rescued, some were seriously injured. One rescued miner, who didn't give his name, described the conditions. He said there was such dense dust and smoke that I did not see anything like this in my life. The dust was so dense, I couldn't see anything ahead, even with the lamp. Many of the miners' families spent Friday night waiting outside the mine, hoping for news. Their vigil continued Saturday and was joined by President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, who pledged rescue efforts would continue with a commitment to hold anyone responsible for the accident. Erdogan said the reasons for this explosion and the people responsible for it, if any, will be revealed with an administrative and judicial investigation. These investigations have already been initiated in a multifaceted manner. Our priority was to reach the workers trapped underground. Ongoing fires are hampering rescue efforts inside the mine, as is the dust-filled air. Hopes of finding more survivors appear to be fading, with the local mayor saying rescue efforts were coming to an end. Erdogan stayed for the miners' funerals that started Saturday. It's unclear what caused the explosion, but authorities say initial indicators point to fire damp, a term used to refer to highly combustible methane gas, a frequent cause of mine explosions. Some local media reports citing Turkish regulatory authorities warned of the danger of a gas explosion, but the government denies that. Turkey is no stranger to mining accidents. 8 years ago, over 300 miners died in the country's worst mining accident in Somma in western Turkey. An investigation following that accident blamed poor safety measures. Erdogan, then Prime Minister, vowed to improve safety procedures in Turkey's mines. But Friday's latest mining accident, according to observers, likely will put that government promise under scrutiny. Dorian Jones for VOA News, Istanbul.
A Pan-African non-profit called Campaign for Familiar Education, or CAMFEED, is working to keep girls in school. It has launched a social media campaign, hashtag EducationMyPower, showing videos of girls across Africa who describe the power they've gained through schooling. Angeline Murimewa is the executive director of CAMFEED. She tells VOA's Carol Van Dam her group is able to get girls in school and keep them there through a unique grassroots education model. It has won many awards, including the 2020 both the Hilton Humanitarian Prize and the Nick Kristoff Holiday Impact Prize.
Girls into school, we help them to thrive, that stay in school and perform. And once they come through school, we help them to transition into leadership. And, you know, the whole cycle continues over and over again. But our focus is educating girls and empowering women.
Give me some examples of what, you know, CAMFEED actually does to help these girls get in school.
I will talk to you about me. I'm one of the very first girls CAMFEED supported through school from the early 90s. So CAMFEED works with communities to be able to identify the most marginalized girls from the communities and meet school-going costs. So those things like decent clothes, decent shoes, meet school-going costs, stationery, and all of that, so that girls like me can go into school and attend and participate alongside others.
You mentioned yourself as being one. Where are you from?
I'm from Zimbabwe, and CAMFEED currently works across 7,000 schools in Zimbabwe, Zambia, Malawi, Tanzania, and Ghana.
You mentioned how, you know, there's difficulties that girls face getting into school. In parts of Africa, especially East Africa, there's still those barriers, such as they don't even have sanitary pads, and then they get embarrassed and they stay home or they drop out. They're forced to do a lot of domestic chores that the boys aren't forced to do, and early marriage. Do you tackle those issues?
Definitely. And this is a challenge across sub-Saharan Africa, actually. You know, we still have close to 52 million children who are out of school. And this was even before COVID. And there are multiple reasons why girls are out of school. Most of it has to do with financial. Their families are too poor to be able to meet their cost. And like we always want to say as an organization, it is not the poverty of culture. It is the culture of poverty. So I think we need to continue to remember that where resources have been provided, we have never had an incident, single incident, where a parent said, my culture doesn't allow my daughter to go to school. There's also the challenge around sanitary wear, which you mentioned, where, you know, you have to make a decision between a pad or food. And how does that work? So you end up, families are being forced to make that tough decision to say, you know, where do we invest? And unfortunately, education suffers.
Can you tell us more about these learner guides, the women who graduate and then they return to their local schools?
Fantastic. So learner guides are young women who have been supported through school by CAMFEED, young women like myself who came from very deprived backgrounds. And now they go back to the schools that they were in and work with other children through school. They cover such issues as resilience, issues as decision making, how do you make decisions, issues as, you know, building your self-esteem, what does it mean? What does it mean to be assertive? But also even such simple things as, you know, how do you organize your work schedule? You were talking about household chores earlier on. How do you organize yourself? How do you negotiate for time to be able to do your studies? How do you work with others to be able to limit how much you must do and how efficiently you can be able to do this?
That's Angeline Murimewa, Executive Director of CAMFEED, speaking with my colleague Carol Van Dam.
This is Science in a Minute.
We've never seen anything like this before. That's what a team of scientists led by the Harvard and Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics say after observing the activity of a black hole 665 million light years away. In October 2018, they noticed a small star drifting close to it and then was ripped apart by the black hole's incredibly powerful gravity. In June 2021, the scientists noticed that the black hole was again lighting up the skies. Since the black hole hadn't gobbled up anything new, what they say they saw was it discharging previously ingested material, like the shredded star. The team says in a press release that material spewing out of it is traveling at half the speed of light. They also say they're not sure why this discharge took so long to occur. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Protests have been growing inside and outside Iran, initially sparked by the death in police custody of Mahsa Amini, a young woman arrested by Iran's morality police for not having her hair fully covered. Each Wednesday, go beyond the breaking news with VOA's Flashpoint Iran. Listen online at voanews.com or in your podcast player.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com. And check out our voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition and our current affairs program Encounter, Press Conference USA and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Chino Rofo in Washington, wishing you a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States hosted the first ever U.S. Pacific Islands Country Summit to build on the commitment to the people of the Pacific. The Pacific Islands and the United States have long-standing trade and diplomatic relationships. In addition to protecting the security of the region, the United States is also committed to combating the dangers of climate change. At the summit, President Joe Biden stressed the importance of strengthening these partnerships.
We're seeing the consequences of climate change around the world very vividly, including in the United States right now. And I know your nations feel it acutely.
However, preparing for climate change is a complex challenge, noted Secretary of State Antony Blinken.
Building resilience is about more than equipping communities to adapt to the effects of the climate crisis, which for many of you is an existential threat. It's also about preparing communities to weather a wide range of interrelated shocks that we know have caused cascading effects.
To that end, President Biden has announced $810 million in expanded programs to improve the lives of Pacific Islanders. These investments include preparing for climate impacts on health and food security and building early warning capacity to predict, prepare for, and respond to climate hazards. Secretary Blinken also discussed plans to strengthen marine livelihoods by supporting fisheries, aquaculture, and tourism as part of the Resilient Blue Economies program. The blue economy refers to the sustainable use of ocean resources for economic growth, improved livelihoods, and jobs while preserving the health of ocean ecosystems. The United States also joined Australia, Japan, New Zealand, and the United Kingdom in the first Partners of the Blue Pacific Ministerial. Together, these countries met with members of the Pacific Islands Forum to discuss how to efficiently develop and bolster the Pacific Islands government and economies in line with PIF's 2050 strategy for the Blue Pacific continent. The United States is committed to deepening the relationship with the Pacific Island countries and helping them prepare for future climate hazards that threaten the region.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.